jurisdiction over all farm workers. Under pressure from the boycott, the growers at that point decided to negotiate with UFLOC. To show good faith, UFLOC suspended the lettuce boycott for 30 days beginning March 26. Then at the request of the growers, this moratorium was extended and then extended again and again and again and again. From May 7th to November 10th, we met on a weekly basis with the growers. At first, the meetings were Caesar and Jerry and other members of the executive board, and the last meetings have been mainly Jerry and Philip Veracruz and Julio Hernandez, and that's been the main negotiating committee. Oh, and David Burciaga. From May 7th to November 10th, we met on a weekly basis with the growers. They insulted us openly, insinuated that we were not a trade union, challenged our confidence, made anti-Semitic slurs against one grower who signed a UFLOC contract, and raised endless objections to agreements we had signed with other employers. At no point did we ask for any provisions not already in other UFLOC contracts. For the sake of peace, the workers agreed to give up certain major clauses vital to their interests. However, the growers refused to meet them halfway. For example, they refused to agree to the most basic clause in our contract, the hiring hall, which would abolish the infamous farm labor contractor system, even though 200 growers, large and small, with whom UFLOC has contracts, have all agreed to the hiring hall. The workers gave visible evidence of their good faith by calling off the boycott and strike. Despite this, the grower committee continually lectured the union on integrity, trust, and responsibility. However, this same committee, which claimed to represent the entire vegetable industry, continually misrepresented its responsibilities and the extent of its authority. In fact, it represented no one. The committee, the grower committee, consisted of Herb Fleming from Admiral Packing and from the Salinas Grower Shipper Association. Was it? I was going to put the growers in there. Sam Andrews, was it? Or Dan?
Dan
Andrews. Dan Andrews from Imperial Valley, representing the Imperial Valley growers, supposedly. And Ed Taylor from Santa Maria, and Jack Hart from Arizona. Jack Hart is Royal Packing Company. This is Admiral Packing, Sam Andrews and Sons, Taylor and Phelan in Santa Maria, and Royal Packing Company in Arizona. Also, there were several attorneys. Andy Church from Salinas, not the owner of Bruce Church, but related to Bruce Church, and representing the growers there. Tom Nassif from Imperial Valley, an attorney, the one who did all the body injunctions, and Ted Brown. Brown is from Santa Maria. And this was the illustrious committee with whom we met for so long. And the implication was again and again given that they represented the whole vegetable industry. In fact, they proved unable to represent anyone in the vegetable industry, including themselves. On the last days of the negotiations, November 9th to 10th, it became clear that the growers had no intention of reaching an agreement. They had just returned from the Western Growers Association meeting in Las Vegas, where there was a lot of tough talk about fighting the farm workers. WGA elected as president Mike Schultz, who was Reagan's campaign manager for agriculture and a leader of the fight for anti-farm worker legislation. Daryl Arnold, a former fresh picked officer who resigned when his company signed with UFLOC, was elected WGA vice president. They began attacking the union publicly. Looking back, and this refers to an article that appeared, well, I think it mentions it down here. Looking back, it's not hard to detect signs of bad faith by the growers. One, even though negotiations were supposed to take the place of economic battle, Salinas growers continued to stump the state and the nation, attacking the union, working hand in hand with the National Right to Work Committee, the John Birch Society, and assorted right-wing groups. As a case in point, Mrs. Ann Merrill, wife of a prominent Salinas grower, became fond of publicly calling her non-white workers orangutans. Would you call this good faith? I think some of you got the, or most of you should have gotten a reprint of the confrontation they had in Salinas at the stadium there when they had an anti-UFLOC rally. And it was a great story written. The writer was kind of a friend of the union, but like of the confrontation on the 40-yard line between the UFLOC people and the growers, and that was kind of a good scene. Well, Ann Merrill was up there shouting, "You're all a bunch of orangutans! You're all a bunch of orangutans!" And second, in the midst of the negotiations in June, July, and August, Salinas and Santa Maria growers continued to fire and harass workers for union activity. In Santa Maria, Evaristo Gonzalez, Andres Serna, Rafael Guerrero, and others were fired. In Salinas, Jesus Guzman, Felix Sanchez, Roberto Treviño, Celestino Rivas, and others were fired for associating with UFLOC organizers and for other pro-union work. On one Salinas area ranch, the entire union committee was fired. Would you call this good faith? In Salinas, right after the July 7th Sacramento demonstration and the killing of the Corey Bill, an organizing drive began in Salinas to reorganize the committees that were organized last year. And they were reorganized on all the lettuce ranches in Salinas Valley. And a very, very strong base of the union, you know, was reestablished. And those committees have now, like, they're following the lettuce crews as they move towards the south. Most of the organizing, Jan Peterson was in charge there, who was on San Francisco boycott, but most of the organizing was done by the Interharvest Fresh Pick and Dorigo workers, who, you know, like went and organized the other workers. And several of the Fresh Pick guys were arrested one night in one of the, I think it was a Royal Hanson Farms, Hardin Farms camp. So the next night about 400 people went back to the camp. They didn't arrest anybody. And it was, you know, a very, very effective organizing drive. And the workers then began expressing their support for the union in small ways, first there were a lot of meetings with them, just kind of like getting stuff for negotiations, economic, you know, rates, what rates workers wanted, the whole business like that, and really preparing well for this set of negotiations. Then people began doing things like wearing buttons on the job. This is to non-union ranches, not at union ranches. And so, like, that's a little thing, but that's very, very significant. And shortly afterwards, the same thing was begun in Santa Maria Valley. And so guys would turn up wearing buttons, and then they started bringing flags to work with them and showing that there was a union crew, and they stick a flag in the ground by the lettuce where they were cutting, and then they'd cut under the UFLOC flag. And some of the lettuce machines had flags flying from them. We have some pictures. I hope we can reproduce them. We have pictures of flags flying from the Bruce Church lettuce machines. And a big flag flying from the top of the Royal Packing Camp. Right on top of the camp, they hoisted a big flag up there. And flags from some of the Royal Packing buses. And, you know, no strike. It wasn't a strike. But just real strong demonstrations of the fact that the workers wanted the union. Then there was a big march in Salinas on September 29th. About 1,000 workers participated in that. And the lettuce was already slowing down at that time, so that was a lot of people. And they marched through the whole produce section in Salinas. Those of you that were in Salinas, remember there was a part of town down around Abbott Street where there was all the companies down there, Bruce Church and Growers Exchange and Fresh Picked and all of them. And so they had this big march, we want a contract, we want a contract, we want a contract. It was a really good scene. Well, while all this was going on, the companies began retaliating and they began firing people, and we'd fight to get them back. And maybe they'd get back. Who's tall? Okay. But there was, you know, continual harassment going on to the workers, in spite of the fact that we were supposed to be negotiating, and that the workers were doing nothing other than expressing the fact that they wanted the union. Three, the Western Growers Association, which represents all the lettuce growers, worked actively to promote anti-farm worker legislation, to outlaw strikes at harvest and the boycott. The lettuce growers decided to draw us into lengthy negotiations to stop the boycott, to stall us through the 1970-71 harvest, to buy time by recognizing us while working hard for legislation that would outlaw strikes and boycotts. Two such efforts, AB 964 and SB 40, have now been killed by the California legislature, to gather financial resources for a long campaign against the Farm Workers Union, and to organize other parts of the agricultural industry in a major effort to crush UFLOC. UFLOC negotiated in good faith and kept negotiating seriously until the end because of our commitment to bring unionization to the vegetable industry through negotiations rather than through another long strike and boycott. But the growers want to fight. They must believe that their millions of dollars and their influential allies, are now unified enough and powerful enough to stop the farmworker movement. I think they're making a mistake. They seriously underestimate our patience and determination. This struggle has never been easy, but farmworkers are accustomed to suffering and to hardship. It took 5 years to win the Delano grape strike. The lettuce workers are no less determined. With hard work and continued support from our friends, we can bring dignity and a measure of justice to the vegetable fields of California and Arizona. Now, that's kind of a statement of where it's at right now. What that means is that as soon as it becomes possible, which would mean a charter, which hopefully is going to be in the next few days, we're going to have to resume the lettuce boycott, and it's going to be a real fight. I mean, nobody should think that this one is going to be like that. Yeah. Well, if you looked at the thing in your packet on the reproduction of the articles from the newspapers, that big kind of fold-out thing, yeah, it's got the article from the LA Times where Harry Bernstein calls it the largest farm labor strike in history and says 5,000 to 7,000 workers.
Actually, yeah. It was more than that.
Huh?
Actually, it was more than that. The peak of the strike, we paid benefits to about 8,400 people.
Yeah, see, we have the records on the strike benefits that were paid. Is that what... Yeah, okay. So, that's kind of... yeah, Kitty.
I had a question about the moratorium. It was kind of an unusual initial boycott to make, and I never was quite sure on why it was extended to the end of the December. In fact, many supporters said that to mine. Every member, we kept saying, well, we negotiate and do things. But...
You want to speak?
Well, see, you can't fight and negotiate, right? In most cases, companies want to negotiate, and they say, if you stop the boycott, we'll negotiate. And so, basically, that's the basic reason, but there were also other political reasons. But we were done anyway because the company is not going to, unless, a lot depends where you're at, right? We were nowhere near winning the lettuce strike, so if they want to negotiate, let's do it. But we're getting a lot of complaints from, a lot of the boycott centers were after Marsh and Marshall said to me that the teachers were giving them a bad time, you know, were locking out the union letters. And I had to assess the weaknesses or the strength of the boycott movement when these things come up. So if you put it like that, you know, to balance it, there was a boycott against, first of all, our boycott wasn't that hot because we had the Teamsters trying to, well, in fact, in some cities, shutting out the union letters. We had the fact that these growers still have Teamster contracts, all of them. And the Teamsters, we had the fact that the FLCO is very uptight about the boycott because of their involvement. We also had the commitment from Mimi that they would support us if we negotiated with the growers. And then we had the public opinion that we have to be very concerned with, that if growers are telling the public that they want to negotiate and we don't negotiate, you know what I mean? We put everything together. We thought that it made sense to negotiate with them. We thought they were in good faith to begin with. We had no reason not to believe them. But besides that, there were all the other political questions, like that they have contracts with the Teamsters and they're not going to give them up. They have we have the question of the involvement with the boycott against the growers.
which makes it tough on the FLCO, but then makes them very jumpy. And all those political things. And so he said they were negotiated, fine. Now, we think that we got out of it. If nothing else, I think that we can make a legal case, but also even better, a public case. They negotiated with us for 7 months, then in fact those contracts are void with the Teamsters.
Because they recognized us.
They recognized us by sitting at the table. So I think publicly we have that stand. And if we had known it was going to be this way, we would have never done it. But you never know, see. In every other case, when we call a boycott off, we get a contract, right?
We did with United Fruit. That was the case with Purex.
No, with all of them.
All of them.
Yeah, when they say we're going to negotiate, it means that they're going to send a contract. And so they didn't. But I think, if we had been negotiating, well, like we have Herb Fleming for Admiral,
yeah,
we would have gotten a contract. What happens, they themselves are, they're not together to negotiate with us. Politically, they're fighting. And the only way we're going to organize, they can't negotiate and sign contracts until they organize. So the best way to organize them is to hit them economically. And then they'll clear their fighting, either to fight us or to negotiate. Next time around, we're going to get a contract.
So you might...
We don't know, for instance. What we think we're going to do is, should we talk about it here now? Well, we'll come back to it when we get into tactics and so forth. But I think we're going to split them. And that's our best hope, I suppose.
You might just... I really think that
this guy want to negotiate. There's no reason why these two... They want to do it. This Salinas wants to negotiate. Imperial Valley's kind of... Arizona wants to go, and Santa Maria, nothing doing. They don't want it. So that's,
You got four geographical areas. You might remember in the Great Boycott in 1969, there was a period of negotiations with 10 growers. Remember that? And that fell apart. And then we came back again the next year, and we got the contracts. They had a similar kind of problem. It was a similar kind of situation. They were in complete disagreement among themselves. And they were trying to negotiate as a group, and they couldn't, because what happens is the guy representing them has to go for the lowest common denominator, right? And so they're continually taking the worst position because they've got to keep their, but see, this guy over here is willing to give a lot more than this guy over here, let's say. But what happens is it breaks down with all of them because they're forced to this position, the worst position, and then, of course, we don't have any choice on that kind of position, but, we can't accept it. And in the lettuce talks, it got so ridiculous in terms of what they wanted that it just became completely unacceptable. Yeah. Gino, you had a question, and then Carol. This is the four major lettuce areas, right? Okay, these are all Western Growers Association guys. Okay, so it's not synthetic in that sense. It is synthetic in the sense that the Salinas guys are more ready to negotiate than the Santa Maria guys, or maybe than the Imperial Valley guys. And that's because, I don't know, we're not sure why, but there could be two reasons. One, Salinas got a taste of a very nice strike last year. And they really got a taste of it. And second, they also had a taste of the boycott that Imperial Valley and Arizona and Santa Maria really didn't get. Because, remember, the boycott, but the boycott was really like in October, November, before we went on ANIL, it was hitting the Salinas guys that were like in Blythe and in the intermediate areas. And so they felt it. Then when we pulled on ANIL, it was the harvest was coming out of Imperial Valley and those places, and they didn't feel much. So I think it's probably synthetic to that extent. Yeah, Carl. I don't know. I think.
No, probably better not to. Then give me 2-3 days to take another crack at the charter, because if that'll be another reason why they'll try to stall it. But our position is, charter or no charter, we've got to build a union and we'll go with it. But, you know, we don't look for an unnecessary fight unless we have to get it. So. But we'll, I mean, nothing's going to keep us from boycotting.
And I think we'll talk also after, like, these figures and stuff, more about specific tactics, strategy, and plan. Because we got to, you know, get together on, like, what exactly we're going to do. Yeah. They said they represented them.
They still say they represent them.
But they don't, because they can't deliver them. Growers chosen among themselves. See, the growers set up a big steering committee. What was there, about 35 growers on it. Everybody from Tom Merrill on the right to, well, I don't know who's on the left among the growers. But it was a big grouping. And then this group was distilled down out of that as a negotiating group. Yeah, Manuel.
How the 200 growers that sign up with the Keystone, the letter that they come from the growers, I guess they have noticed probably about six of them that have the Keystone label on them. The red, I don't think they got them.
They'll get them back pretty quick.
Right. What kind of action if the union takes a hard line
we're going to fight. They can take all the 200 or we take all the 200. They're going to determine on who wins.
Right. So get ready.
There's five questions over here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see them. Ramon and then.
Yeah. How important is the National Labor Relations Board and the AFL-CIO? When were the Nixon appointments made?
Well, the Nixon majority took over the board about 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
So this is a very recent development.
Well, they've been uptight about it, you know. But, like, this makes the whole thing even more uptight. Yeah. I mean, he's referring to the organizing committee status and the AFL-CIO's concern about our conducting secondary boycotts while we're in organizing committee of the AFL-CIO, because the NLRB, which enforces the secondary boycott laws, now has a Nixon majority. And, of course, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. She was next, and then Bill, and then Gabriel. Yeah.
In the letter, it says that the workers agreed to give up certain causes vital to their interests, like what?
Well, we.
Yeah, we had.
When I started getting an idea that this bastard thing we want to negotiate, I got the board together and I said, look, I think it would be good to give on some of the clauses that they are holding tight on. For two things, it'd be better to have a contract, even though it's not a perfect contract, and move on to other things. But also, it'd be good to flush them out because we've got to resolve one way or the other. And so we proposed some very, very major concessions to them. But really, they're not that major when it comes to the... They're major the successor clause, which doesn't really mean that much in Salinas because they don't own the land. But it meant it was a political issue with them, not an issue of fact.
And it would also not mean so much if the whole industry had come in.
If the whole industry comes in, doesn't
mean
anything.
The successor clause is academic.
But so this was a political clause because we felt that they were holding for the successor clause only to make them look good so they could go and get the other growers to agree to the contract. So we said, look, we'll give that. Then on the pesticides, we said, all right, we don't go into any language. Just leave it very vague and say that the companies realize the companies accept the companies make a statement in the clause that workers are harmed by pesticides, and then we'll decide pesticide cases on an individual basis, and which is a damn good thing for them. It's not bad for us. It meant just more fighting. I mean, fighting every damn case, but we're willing to do that in order to get the contract moving, in order to give them what we thought they needed to get the other growers to come in. Then on the other thing that we suggested to them was that we would, on the grower shipper, which that wasn't giving really anything away, on the grower shipper, we suggested pretty much what we did in Hubline. See, I don't know if you're familiar with the relationship with the grower towards the shippers in Salinas or in the whole lettuce. Let me explain briefly if you don't know. Herb Fleming is a shipper, and he owns some land, owns very little land, rents a lot of land, but then he also goes and gets a lot of small growers. It says, you have 60 acres of lettuce or 100 acres, I want you to plant lettuce for me. And then gives that employer either a loan or just a commitment to buy the lettuce from him. They have many different ways of working it. But basically, that's how it works. And so then, say, the shipper, which would be Herb Fleming, would have maybe something like 30 small growers in Salinas. These growers are small. They're not shippers. We don't even know their names. They're guys that all of them, most of them do not have their own land. Most of them, see, growing in Salinas Valley, it's a little different than most areas. In Salinas Valley, the land is owned by Southern Pacific, by University of California, by Stanford, by
Spreckles Sugar Company,
by large landholders. And that land has been owned for, a number of years. And it's not being sold. And these guys go around. It may be a guy who was a supervisor for one of the shippers. He goes around, he wants to start his own business, and goes and rents, say, 200 acres and starts farming. So he becomes then a grower only. That then is the shipping part of it is done by, say, Herb Fleming. But in lettuce, the shipper controls the harvesting. So no matter how many small growers he has, he will take his crews and his equipment and do the harvesting for everybody, all of those small growers. Because a small grower can't afford to have the equipment or the crews. Because if you cut lettuce on 30 acres, you cut it in 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever it is. And so workers wouldn't have any job security. So the shipper then takes the crews and they go, all year, moving Salinas and then over to Brentwood into the valley near Fresno, over to Blythe, over to Yuma, over to Central Arizona, back to Blythe, back to Yuma, back to Imperial, back to Yuma, and over to Salinas. And so they keep those crews going, but that's the way they do it. So on the grower shipper, we said, okay, we were saying, once you sign a contract, our original position, anybody you buy lettuce from, those guys have to be members of the union, which would be in most cases, like maybe an irrigator, maybe one or two tractor drivers, or maybe the same guy. Every small grower would have from one to three guys that would be working maybe full-time or at least, say, 8-9 months out of the year with a small grower. Well, and we're telling the shippers, all right, we signed a contract with you. We want you to deliver the workers that work for the growers you buy from. Of course, they're not going to do it. But that was our position. So we came back and we said, okay, on the grower-shipper thing, see, the growers control the big workers, control the thinning, which is big, and control the harvesting, which is big. It's all right, we'll agree to sign a contract, and we won't make responsible for a small grower. However, we don't want to insulate these workers, so we have the right to strike these growers even though they have contracts with you. And, that's what they wanted, and so we gave them that. And then we gave them the concession of, I think those were the successor pesticides grower shipper were the three big ones. And then
two or two little things.
Yeah, but they were minor.